good afternoon, everybody. It is 2:04, as you can tell by Johnny Rivers' melodious and sonorous. I keep liking that word, although really he was just sort of smarmy and shy, very much out of style for Johnny Rivers, who is the guy who did Secret Agent Man, is very much more of a sort of hard-driven guitar thing as opposed to one of those romantic crooners. But you're listening to Movement Museum here on CKUT. Rachel and can you allude? Hold on. There we go now. Try that once more.
Rachel Nichuin.
Nichuin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing where the sound gets into the head. Visualizing the letters, though, just confuses the heck out of me.
It confuses the heck out of most people, but maybe by the time I'm going back to Ireland, you'll have it right by then.
Well, there, so I can actually do your name backwards, though, way easier. Lacar.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So, okay. Well, yes, I will practice harder, but I'm very used to calling you just Rachel.
Yes, and, well, that works.
And yes, thank you very much for coming in for today's show of Movement Museum. You wouldn't know it, but we actually have a whole lot of stuff for you. There is, I got Lynette Dougherty, who's hanging out on the phone right now, waiting to talk to us. She did Metro as part of the Zoo Fest last week, and I got to see that. There's also part one of my interview with Robin Henderson, who does Dance Animal, which is part of the Fringe and Zoo Fest, and yeah, there might even get into part two as well. We have, as per normal, the awesome Montreal dancing calendar plus auditions. Yeah, all sorts of fun stuff. And before you know it, the hour will be out. As I said, it's CKUT 90.3 FM. And now let me see if I can get Lynette on the phone. Lynette, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hot
hello.
Diggity dog, the technology works. It's always lots of fun when it's you push a button and it does what it's supposed to. And so, yes, first of all, thank you very much for agreeing to be interviewed because, it's a pleasure to speak to you. As a little bit of background, stuff like that information, I've mentioned, I don't know if you were able to hear over the air while you were on the phone, but it is, I said that you had done the show Metro as part of the Zoo Fest. How did that all happen, start, and so on and so forth?
Well, they had actually sent out a call for submissions through Equity, so the Canadian Actors Equity Association, which does a fabulous service for us all over email. And so the directors of the festival had sent out a call for submission saying they were starting this new festival, looking for independent artists, people who wanted to be a part of it, and inviting them to submit their work and proposals and what they might like to do to be a part of the new festival. So I had the idea for Metro kicking around in my head for some time and hadn't really developed it a whole lot further than some basic ideas and a little bit of choreography because I hadn't had a venue or a place to mount it. So this looked really exciting to me. I love Montreal. I've been there a couple of times before, and so I thought, well, this sounds like a lot of fun. So I developed it a little bit more and sent in my proposal and waited to hear. And then when they picked it up for the festival, then it was a good impetus to actually start
getting
more choreography together for it.
How long ago did they send the call out for, and how long until you heard back?
So it would have been, I guess, earlier this year, maybe February-ish, something like that. I could be wrong about the timeline exactly on that, but probably about February that they sent out their call for submissions, and then I probably heard back from them within, say, 3 or 4 weeks,
oh,
saying
fair.
That they
that's...
would like me to bring my piece out to Montreal and be part of the show.
That was very quick turnaround time. I always was under the impression that these sort of like big-time producers sit on their answers for like years, months, and eons.
Well, some of them do. I think some of the smaller independent festivals, I know the Fringe Festival circuit, they tend to do it by a lottery, and they tend to have everybody submit their pieces, and I don't know exactly how long their deadlines are, but it is somewhat quicker. It's not the same as, you know, mounting a giant big-budget show somewhere where they do tend to take a lot longer and have to figure out their subscription series and how they're going to do it and all of that stuff. So it does tend to be a little faster when it's independent artists mounting your own work.
No, exactly. And then you'd mentioned that you had the idea for Metro sort of mulling around in your head for a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah, since we're going to end up talking about the whole process, for this summer seems to be the summer where I am just enamored of process. Thank you for seeing me through it.
Yeah.
What was the sort of initial sort of nut seed, impetus, concept, and if you can then sort of lead step by step, then I might prompt you how it changed over the various incarnations.
Sure. Well, I think for me, as a dancer and choreographer, there are a lot of things that will inspire me or sort of take seed and kind of kick around in my brain for a little while before I actually get into a studio and do anything with it. And the idea for Metro was just, I live in Toronto and I take the subway pretty much everywhere. It doesn't make a whole lot of practical sense to have a car downtown. Parking's crazy expensive and there's nowhere to do that anyway. So I'm on the subway a lot. And you see a lot of different people on the subway. You see a lot of different people on the subway. You see people who I think all kind of thrown together. It's this little microcosm of the city. You know, you do see here anyway, you get the Bay Street Boys and the banker suits and that heading off to work. You see the people who are on the subway because they don't have another mode of transportation. That you see people who are coming in working crazy hours. So you see them early in the morning and coming home late at night. You see students out going out to do whatever, hanging out at the mall, doing whatever. I mean, I just think it's this great little picture of all the different people that you'll see in the city, and a neat way to kind of tell that story. There's a song called Subway Song. It's by The Cure, and they were one of my big favorite bands in high school, and they had a song called Subway Song that was about a woman going home by herself late at night on the subway. That it's got this really cool bass line to it, and it's kind of spooky and kind of funky, and it ends as the song fades out, and then there's this big crash, scream, sound, noise at the end of it that, you know, if you haven't heard this song before, it kind of gives you a little jolt, and it's I've always liked that song, and I always liked that ending, that it kind of just creepy kind of ending that you're not really sure, well, what just happened? Did she get attacked? Did she get run over by a train? You don't really know what happens when you hear this big noise at the end of the song. And I'd always thought that would be an interesting song to work with. And other things, I guess it was just, you know, bits and pieces here and there. I'd think, oh, it'd be fun to do a song of kids coming on the subway, you know, just breaking out into dance and doing something. And the song I loved for that was a song by a group called Digital Underground, and they have a song called Do What You Like. That there is a longer version of the song. There's probably like a 3.5 minute radio edit of the song, but there is a longer version of the song that's about almost 9 minutes. And at that 3.5 minute mark, they sort of have somebody come in on the song, and you know, they do this, you know, we have now reached the 3.5 minute mark of this song. Radio stations may begin your fade here. And they do actually fade the song out, and then there's this big beep and it comes back in. And I thought that was a lot of fun. And that was the point in the song that I did do in Metro. We had a cop kind of come in and break up the dancers on the subway kind of thing. He came in at that point, and as the song kicked back in again, we actually had the cop start dancing for that part, which we thought was a lot of fun.
So, you know, I've always been a big fan of Humpty Hump. I'm always just disappointed that he never made it, or they never made it up to Montreal, as far as I know.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. They're a band that I think they seemed like that song, the Humpty Dance, and Do What You Like was pretty big, too. And and then that was kind of it. Well, I really liked them. I liked that whole album. They had a lot of neat stuff on it, and I used another song by them too, Danger Zone in Metro, that, you know, that they were a band that I really liked a lot. And it's been interesting to me when people go, oh yeah, Digital Underground, I love that band. So yeah,
you know, along that, it's one of the things that occurred to me after seeing the show and so on was, are you familiar at all with Thomas Pynchon, the author? Because yeah, for I'll try and make this long story really short, but it is the sort of thing where I saw Buckaroo Banzai, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, which is just an absolutely phenomenal film, but it's a great B phenomenal film. And in it, then realized that they had ripped off a whole whack of stuff from Thomas Pynchon, namely all the bad guys being from Grover Mills. But in V, which is one of his shorter books, he has his heroes do what they call yo-yoing, which is where if you have no money, you're really down on your luck. I don't know, you're probably taking heroin along with speed and all sorts of other stuff, and really just a complete outsider. You start the day by getting on the subway, and then you just stay on the subway the whole day, going from one end to the other end, to the other end, to the other end,
right,
watching people get on, get off. And it's always been something, well, granted, I don't take the drugs. I'm not that down and out. There are certain times when I've been depressed, but that could be why I haven't gotten around to yo-yoing. But it has always been something to me which has been sort of, yeah, I'd love to do it one day.
And watch people on the subway.
Exactly. And it sort of struck me as being, you're sort of brief vignettes of what was happening on the subway and so on. It's sort of, oh, okay. And that was, that's it. My sort of little sort of connection that of stuff that wasn't previously connected.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think as, you know, in theater school, as actors too, we're always told, you know, watch people. That's what we are as artists, right? You sort of reflect back humanity and what people are in their various forms, and that's a great place to people watch, sitting on the subway. You know, you see, I'm always amazed at the things people will actually do on the subway. And at one point, we went out to do some pictures of just get some cast shots and goofing around on the subway. So that's, I guess we had our own mini yo-yoing because we just rode out to the end of the West Line here on the subway and then, you know, turned around and came back again kind of thing. But we took a picture and had a friend got some pictures of him pretending to clip his toenails on the subway. And people were like, oh, gross, come on, who would really do that? And I'm like, no, I swear, I've seen people do that. And on the way back, we saw a woman flossing her teeth. And I went, are you kidding me? You're sitting on the subway flossing your teeth. There's no way to really do that inconspicuously. You've got this big thread of floss and you're flossing your teeth on the subway.
It is one way of claiming the subway as your space as opposed to public space.
No one's sitting near you when you're doing that. I didn't see what she did with the floss afterwards. I should have checked in on that and made sure it wasn't near my seat.
I don't want to know. But back to Metro the Dance.
Yeah.
So you had this idea. How did you get other people involved? Was it initially a piece for you that then got larger and larger? Did you initially envision it as a large piece for a troupe of 75,000 dancers, like Busby Berkeley type concepts and so on?
Yeah, I would actually have loved to have mounted the show with a really big cast, because in my head it would have been great to have a bunch of people on stage. So for even when some of the dance pieces were being done, that there would have just been people riding the train, you know, just people on the trains, either just sitting there or, you know, could have done some sort of simplified choreography to have, you know, basically a bunch of extras kind of thing, but a lot of other people on stage to be some of these characters. I had also at one point wanted just to have some of these characters be just kind of the weird people that you'd see, you know, have somebody, you know, picking their nose on the train kind of thing, or have somebody, it's life, it's what happens. And people would tell me, the more I would talk about this piece that I was doing, I would hear all kinds of people going, oh yeah, you know what I saw on the subway once? And I heard a story about a guy who, you know, wearing a big long trench coat, and the door, I guess, would have pinched his coat. In the version of the story I heard, they said that, you know, the doors kind of closed. He was half in and half out of the train, and then it went to the next station, which, I mean, the trains here in Toronto, they won't drive. It won't actually go unless the door is really closed. So the best, I think, could have really happened is it could have pinched his coat or something like that, enough that the door sensors felt they were closed and the train took off. And they said when he got to the next station, everybody kind of saw this guy reaching in his trench coat and they're kind of thinking, oh, my goodness, what's going to happen from here? And there was a little lizard inside his coat that he sort of took out and was stroking it and saying, are you okay? Are you okay? And really concerned with this lizard. And I thought, what a great character to stick on the train in the middle of this piece somewhere. So, but the financial considerations being what they are in a small independent-type festival like this, you don't have a huge budget. And it's really artist-driven. So what you make are the box office profits from people coming to see your show. And there isn't really a huge budget for doing stuff like hiring a big outside cast. I didn't have, you know, some giant investor or, you know, major producer to go, hey, I'm going to give you millions of dollars and you can do whatever you want with this show. So some of those ideas had to kind of go. And we played some of these different characters that we would see, but I, you know, wasn't able to hire, you know, a cast of 50 or something like that to come on. And so what I ended up having to do was kind of really go through all the pieces and really just prune and kind of say who is absolutely necessary in this piece. You know, I wanted to do a pas de deux number. I thought, well, I need a male dancer. And I thought, okay, well, I wanted to do a fight scene. I'm like, well, I need two male dancers then and another female dancer. And, you know, I had thought, oh, maybe I can do it with a cast of eight. But, I mean, any types of these of fringe type festivals, which is, you know, really what Zoo Fest is, the smaller cast that you have, the better it is, because really everybody is just splitting box office profits. And so, of course, the more ways you have to split that, the less financially lucrative it can be for the artist. But I mean, I think any of us know going into these festivals, they're not necessarily financially rewarding, but they are incredibly, incredibly creatively rewarding, because without these types of festivals, you don't have artists having a way to actually just take what they want to put on and present and having a venue to do it in. I mean, I'm so thankful that they've started up a new festival like this. It really gives you a way to take the work that you want to present and get it out there to a public. We had a venue, we had tech support, we had, you know, lighting and sound directors, a stage manager. Like, you get a lot of stuff that if it was just, you know, an artist on their own saying, well, I need to rent a venue and I need to, you know, hire lighting designers and I need to hire all these different people, it really becomes cost prohibitive and you don't have the opportunity to present your work that way. So you just want to have to try and kind of work within those financial constraints and figure out what the best way is to actually mount your piece, but try to keep your costs down at the same time.
And then what happened once you got to Montreal?
And then once I got to Montreal, I guess my original analogy had been it was pruning and discovering who's absolutely essential, and in the end that turned out to be pretty much just me. So that's what happened with the show. We had been going out with a group of four. It was going to be myself and another female dancer and then two male dancers. And we were leaving on Saturday, so July the 11th, and on the late Wednesday night, the other female dancer who was going to come out with us heard that her father, who had been diagnosed with cancer a couple years before, he had been in Mexico undergoing some experimental treatments and had really taken a turn for the worse, and they had airlifted him back to Edmonton and wasn't expected to make it through the week. And in fact, he died on the Sunday that when we got out to Montreal. So she had decided, you know, she said, I just can't go and do the show and risk not seeing my dad before he dies. And, you know, we all thought, as you know, as much as when you're in the middle of a show, it always seems so all-encompassing and all-important, but, you know, really, 20 years from now, a show is another show, hopefully on a long list of shows on your resume, whereas you really wouldn't forgive yourself for not having gone and seen your dad. So, you know, it was, certainly wasn't something that any of us were upset by. It was all something that we all understood and said, of course, you have to go and see your dad. And we had two more days of rehearsal in Toronto, so we tried to rework things as best we could. And I think I was really happy with where we were, actually happier than I thought I would be with that kind of loop thrown at us at the end. But so then it was a group of three of us going out to Montreal to do the show. And so we got out there on the Saturday. We packed everybody pretty much into my parents' little car, along with my two kids and the set. So it was quite a drive to get out there. And then we did our first show. We had our tech rehearsal on the Monday, and we did our first show Monday. And then and we thought it went well. And then Tuesday show, Wednesday's matinee, we ended up having to cancel because we did not have an audience for it. And we said, well, we'll just take that time that we, you know, would have been doing a show. And we all kind of hit the streets and handed out promo cards and did some little, little tidbits out on the street to try and drum up some business and get people interested in the show. So we did that Wednesday so that we'd have our audience Wednesday night. And throughout, we seemed to be well received, and I was really happy with the audience response. We didn't have huge audiences, which meant, you know, it wasn't going to be a financial moneymaker, but I think we knew that going into the festival in the first place, and especially this being the first year for ZooFest, I think, you know, everybody's learning from the process, you know, in terms of it's not something necessarily that's top of people's minds right away in Montreal. You know, it's under the umbrella of Just for Laughs, which obviously has a huge international reputation and everybody knows about it. And ZooFest, I hope that it catches on in the same way and you know, for Montrealers and people all over the world, that it also becomes a destination festival, because, you know, I think there were some really talented groups out there and I'm sure they could have all, used a bigger audience. We saw a couple of shows while we were there, and again, you know, small crowds, so it made you feel a little bit better that it wasn't just my show that wasn't selling really well. But you know, also I think that the festival organizers worked really hard. Lucy Evely is the director of the festival, and she was so supportive and so incredible. And, you know, I know just probably worked down to the bone these last few months pulling everything together. So I know the festival is still on, and there are some, you know, great shows definitely worth seeing that people can still check out, because I think they go till the 26th.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But for our show on the Thursday, the Wednesday night, the Wednesday when our matinee was canceled, we had thought, you know, we'd go out and do some promotional work, and we went down to St. Catherine, but we had also known just up the street from the theater, because we were at La Musée du Sourire, and so we saw that, you know, there's an area at Prince Arthur and Saint-Laurent, and we thought, well, that would be a great place to go, and, you know, seems very pedestrian-friendly and arts-friendly and lots of people around and outdoor cafes and patios and stuff, so we thought, well, we'd hit there the next day. And when we got up there the next day, one of the dancers who had survived the trip so far had decided that was it for him. He said, we're not making any money, and I want $50 a day, and if you don't give me $350, I'm not doing the show tonight. And I went, what? So, you know, I thought, I don't have $350 to give you. I'm not independently wealthy. We all knew going into this that, you know, there was a possibility that we would not make a lot of money or any money. And, you know, I guess the agreement that any of these fringe shows have with the artists is that, you know, as the producer myself, you know, any loss would be mine alone. I wouldn't expect another dancer to come on to do the show and have to invest their own money and lose it. That, you know, it would be my loss, and that money that was made would be split equally amongst the artists, because we all worked hard on it. And we had planned to do mount the show again here in Toronto, where we thought, well, you know what, we have a better audience base for that, and this is where we know people, and if, you know, we can come home from Montreal and then, you know, do the show again here, that will make us the money, because we all figured, you know, we have friends and people that we know, and we could, you know, get a crowd out here that would be worth our while to do financially. But he kind of had a big diva moment and hissy fit, and you know, in the end, at the time, it was horrifying. I thought, what are you talking about? We're supposed to leave for the theater in half an hour. What do you mean you're not going to do the show? And, you know, now I kind of go, well, there's always the something to laugh at. We're up at on Prince Arthur. It's kind of cobblestones, and he was in his rollerblades and went to make this big dramatic exit, and then realized he couldn't quite rollerblade on cobblestone and had to sit down and change his shoes. And I thought, that probably wasn't the big moment you were hoping for there, actually, when you now have to, just a minute, then I'll storm out of here in a fit of rage, sort of thing.
We can save him further embarrassment by deliberately avoiding mentioning his name.
No, I figure that's not really necessary.
Exactly. Let's say that's embarrassment enough.
But, yeah, also, I had been his ride to Montreal, so I kind of went, I'm assuming you have another way home, or did you really expect me to drive for 5 hours with you again and put you in the car home? And he kind of, well, I'll let you know, and, you know, finally got his shoes off and stormed off. And so the other dancer who was then left and I were basically went, wow, okay, what are we going to do and try to salvage tonight, you know? And he was thinking, oh, my goodness, well, the cast kind of fell apart. We were going to be four. Now it's just two of us, and how are we going to make it work? And I thought, well, I know that there were already tickets pre-sold for that night, and you have the old adage, right, the show must go on. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, we'd have to cut. There was a pas de deux number that I did with the dancer who had left. I thought, well, that can't stay. Obviously, there's no time to reteach you that number and do all those lifts in about half an hour before we start call time. And but we kind of used the walk down to the theater. So literally from, you know, Prince Arthur to Sherbrooke, that was our, you know, let's figure out what we're going to do and kind of talk through the show bit by bit and said, okay, well, this number we can still keep, and this part here, everybody was in unison, so it won't really matter. We'll, you know, we'll lose two counts here where it's supposed to be a, you know, one at a time in canon, so we'll have to, like, do an extra something or other here or take two counts each on this, and literally just kind of talk through the show. And, you know, I'm very glad that, you know, the other dancer who was left, he's a very strong freestyler, and one of the reasons that I loved him so much at the audition, just really, really strong, and so he was really able to pull that together and go out there and do it very quickly. And, you know, I'm have a strong background as an actor and doing a lot of improv in that as well, and so felt like, okay, well, this is something that we can pull off and still put on a show and manage to make it all work and still give the people who were coming that night a good show and not just sort of, I don't know, this is all we can do for you tonight, sorry about that, sort of thing, you know. So we went on and made that night work, and it's true, quite a bit of it was you know, on stage kind of going, all right, let's, this is kind of, we're winging it and we're doing some improv and freestyling a little bit. And, but we just sort of knew how many counts we'd have to make that work for before we'd get back into parts of the choreography that we could do together again. And made it through the show, and you know, kind of both looked at each other afterwards and went, "Wow, that actually went a lot better than I expected. That was a lot better than I expected." And the audience response had been good as well. So, you know, that was definitely felt good at the end of that, to feel like we kind of made it through that bit of a crisis. But then he had decided that pretty much, you know, the show had fallen apart, and he was missing a friend's wedding back in Toronto to be out in Montreal doing the show, and kind of had said, "Well, you know, yeah, I'll stick around and do tonight's show, but then I'm kind of done. I guess the show kind of fell apart, and that was it. I'm going to go home."
He too shall remain nameless.
He too shall remain nameless. But I'm not upset at that. I mean, I completely understand where he's coming from that. You come out, you know, signed on to do a show with four people that became your sort of the last man left standing kind of things. And, you know, and he and I have talked since, and he said, you know, it just felt a bit like that Monty Python sketch, you know, where you keep, like, you cut off their arms and you cut off their legs. You're like, come back here, I'll bite your legs off, you know, like, I'm not done yet, I'm still going.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then he was gone, and that was the Thursday night. So although most of the week had gone, it was really only halfway through the run. You know, it was 10 performances that we got as part of Zoo Fest, and so I still had a Friday night performance and then two shows Saturday and two shows Sunday. And, you know, I had been thinking, well, I guess that's it. If the cast is all kind of gone, maybe I'm done. And, you know, was thinking, well, I guess I just pack up and drive home. And I called my husband to sort of tell him what was going on, and he went, well, you can't drive home now. By the time you pack up and get those sets in the car, he's like, you know, it took you about 3 hours just to pack the car. And, you know, but then driving home from there, you know, I would have been driving right through the night on no sleep, and probably would have been a real hazard on the road. So it was a good thing for him to say, you should at least, you know, stay the night and leave in the morning. And just kind of having the time to kind of think that through, instead of just, oh, everything fell apart, I'm going to go home, I kind of went, you know, I don't really want to go home. Like, you know, I had come out to Montreal to be a part of the festival, but also to enjoy the city a little bit, and I hadn't really had a chance to do that. And I'd had my kids with me as well, and they had been itching to go climb a mountain and wanted to go up to the top. And and they also had not yet had Montreal bagels, and that was high on their list of things to do. So I, you know, kind of as I was lying in bed that night, was thinking, well, you know, how can I rework this? I have a good friend here in Toronto named Anne-Marie Scheffler. I will say her name because she's lovely, and, you know, there you go, a little plug for Anne-Marie.
Yes,
Scheffler, if you ever get a chance to see her show. But she did a show in a SummerWorks festival here in Toronto that she had co-written with a friend of hers, so it would have been a two-hander play. And, you know, it was more than just having hired another actor to do it with her. This friend of hers was the co-writer. The two of them had come up with the concept together. And the way that the SummerWorks Festival works is a little bit differently. They actually had to pay, and, you know, they sort of like paid in advance to sort of be a part of the show. And then her friend said, I don't want to do it anymore, and bailed on her. And so she went to the organizers of the festival saying, well, you know, look, it's not happening. My friend left. And they said, well, I'm sorry. You've paid your deposit, and it's non-refundable. You can't get it back. Why don't you make it a solo show? And she went, well, I can't. You know, it was written for the two of us. It's two people. I can't make it a solo show. But, you know, she basically would have just had to eat that as a loss because they weren't going to give her any of her money back. So she did create a solo show out of it, and turned out to be the first of seven very successful solo shows that she has since done. And that's, she is in Winnipeg right now doing, you know, her seventh solo show and doing phenomenally well at it. And, you know, I just, that story kept coming back to me. I was like, well, maybe I can make this a solo piece. Maybe I can make this work. And, you know, kind of started thinking through it. And I went, well, there are things that I sort of needed other people on stage for, and thought, well, maybe there's an audience participation element that could work in this. Maybe there's a way to make it a little more interactive. And, you know, if ever there's an audience for those types of things, it's the festival crowds that come out and really support independent work and that are up for something new and something different and something a little bit more participatory. So, that's what I did. The show must go on, and I was still in town, and I thought, yeah, I've got a venue, I've got my work to show, and I'm going to stick around, and I'm going to do it and make it work, and I did.
Yes, you did, and I'm just absolutely awestruck, awe-inspired, and amazed. Rachel, who is a co-host here and stuff like that, who has sort of heard bits and pieces of the story, was listening to you and just shaking her head and grimacing. Oh my God, how did she do that? And it is something to me where, while it is relatively benign, not terribly important in the grand scheme of things, at that moment is like just everything is fallen to pieces, and then you say, no, I'm a rock, I'm gonna be doing this. And yeah, it's I am just absolutely flabbergasted and amazed at your ability to pull it off and how you pulled it off.
And Lynette, can I ask you just one question?
Sure.
Do you have any intention of ever working with other dancers ever again?
With anybody else, or with those guys in particular?
With anybody else.
It's a funny thing. I would love to to remount the piece. I'd love to do it as a big piece someday. But I really do. There's part of me that thinks, yeah, maybe the way to go is solo shows, because at least you're not going to bail on yourself. it's a funny kind of thing. My husband had said, maybe the lesson from this is, there had been a friend of mine that I had wanted to do the show with who ended up getting a last-minute call-out to Stratford, and he said, if you can't get the people that you want that are your first choice, maybe you just shouldn't have done it at all. Maybe that's the lesson to take away from this. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know, maybe, or maybe it's, to know that you can count on yourself and I should just do solo shows in the future. Or, I don't know, or maybe that's why people tend to, I know a lot of people in the arts say, oh, it's too hard to get in, they just hire the people that they know, they only hire their friends. And I'm like, yeah, maybe that's why, because they're your friends, and you know who they are, you've worked with them before, and you know their sort of level of professionalism. And
or conversely, when your kids want bagels, your kids get bagels.
Exactly. Yes. That's the lesson, really, is if we have not been and had Montreal bagels yet, they have to have them.
And so, yeah, there it's... Yeah, thank you very much for this. There's a slight sort of, thing, because you do run this place called The Space that's over down the 401 from here.
Yeah.
What exactly is it? Can you clue us in and so on? Because I'm sort of semi-interested.
Absolutely. It's an acronym, actually, for School of Performing Arts for the Community of East York.
Oh.
And I had been doing, I guess I had been sort of the stereotypical actor, dancer, / cocktail waitress. Mm-hmm. was doing a lot of guest teaching, and I'd been asked to go into a number of different schools and either just do workshops with them or come in and do some teaching, and started to lead to more regular teaching gigs, and eventually decided that I would open my own studio, and that was sort of what I wanted, was a bit of a mix of some of the things that I'd seen other places that I taught. I wanted to be a studio where, whether it's kids or adults coming in, that they're taught by professionals, working professionals. I think at a lot of dance studios, you get the sort of, I grew up in a studio taking classes, and then I started assistant teaching when I was 15, and I never really left, but I've never worked a day in my life as a dancer. You just get all these people who are teaching dance classes who've never actually worked as dancers. And I thought, I want to be a studio where, what you're learning is actually from people who, are working professionals and are currently working. And again, because a lot of what you see is the, I haven't actually danced since 1972, but here I am teaching you and telling you what's current and how to get a job as a dancer. And I think, you don't really know anymore, right? So I wanted to have a place where, as I was trained by actual working professionals, and I wanted to be able to do that, and I wanted to be able to continue my career as a choreographer, as a dancer, as an actor, and not kind of give that up and just turn to teaching. I wanted to be able to teach and keep teaching what I know and what I kept learning, because I think it's an ongoing process. Certainly the stuff I've learned from this show is more, you're learning more and more every time you're getting out there and having doing a new gig. So I wanted to be able to keep doing that. And so I have some other friends teaching with me at the studio, but I teach dance classes, I teach musical theater and acting classes, and I have a couple of friends who come in and teach vocal classes as well. So we do a little bit of everything. I have I started kids' classes, little kids' classes as well, because I kept dancing right through both my pregnancies. I felt really good about, I felt really good dancing. I was jumping on my due date kind of thing, so I felt really good and wanted to keep going and wanted to continue teaching. And that's what I've done. So that's, now I think I have the best of both worlds, and that's kind of my day job. I have a place where I'm still dancing and performing and creative, and yet also have the side of me that still gets to, you know, go on set or go do shows and go on tour and stuff like that.
That sounds phenomenal.
Yeah.
At which point, it's the-space.org, if I have it right?
.ca. The-space.ca.
Cool, because there it's, well, I'm certain that there are tons of people here who want to run and sign up. I think that sort of trip back and forth down the 401 is going to make it a little bit difficult. But
$2 Tuesdays all summer long. We're doing a special promo, so we're doing $2 Tuesdays dance classes. You can come check out a class for $2.
Very cool.
There you
and
go.
Worst comes worst, they can check it out on the website and then switch them all. Borrow the good bits from you and do it up here. And give you royalties.
There you go.
So, yes, thank you very, very much. Congratulations again.
Thank you. Thanks for coming to see the show, too.
No problem. It was my pleasure. I enjoyed it immeasurably.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Give my kids... don't even bother that. Let's keep it professional. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And that was Lynette Dougherty from Metro, which played at the Zoo Fest and made me realize, today is all Zoo Fest all the time. But yes, I think we're going to take a slight break here. We have some bills to pay. We have some other things. I've been wearing these headphones for a little bit too long. My ears are getting sweaty.
Lotto Quebec is proud to present the 23rd edition of Festival International Nuit d'Afrique from July 14th to 26th. The greatest names in world music are coming to perform. They include the Orchestre National de Barbès, the leading group in the international oriental rock scene, reggae and Latin rhythms with Salsa Muffin creator Sergeant Garcia, the unique Maria de Barros, one of the great voices of Cape Verde, the mythical group Kassav celebrating their 30-year career. For more information, visit www.festivalnuitdafrique.com or call 514-499-FINA.
Come to the 4th Annual Shazam Fest, 3 days and three nights, a celebration of music, skateboarding, wrestling, burlesque, and circus, July 24th to July 26th, an open-air festival set in the beautiful Eastern Townships, featuring Cali Roots, Pete Moss, The Dead Dolls Burlesque, Coral Egan and Charles Papazoff, Roma Carnival, Mello G, Montreal's Hoop Troop, and the Vagabond Blues, the Eastern Townships Wrestling Association. Shredder Mike and the Valois Boys crew present the Jam at Shazam Big Trick Skateboarding Competition with cash prizes. Come and skate on the largest outdoor skate ramp in the townships. Bring your helmet. Shazam Idol Competition. Music jams hosted by the Township's Bluegrass and Old Time Music Society. Workshops, camping on site, rustic drinking bar, organic food booths, and vendor village. Tickets and information available at ShazamFest.com or dial 819-580-4118. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
And we're back. It's 2:42. This is Movement Museum. Rachel and Zeke here behind the microphones, these fuzzy little things that sort of get stuck between our teeth every now and again. No, you don't like my blame attempts at jokes. I'm sorry.
They don't get stuck in my teeth.
Okay.
I don't know what you're doing.
How about we ask you to let me take my foot out of my mouth, and while I'm doing that, you have the awesome calendar.
Yeah, I think people out there might want to know what's happening here, considering there's a lot of stuff happening to do with ZooFest at the moment and other things too. And for now, we have on the 23rd of July, Théâtre de Verdure are going to be showing a piece called Les Précédentes, and it's a I'll read it in French. Ce projet d'architecture chorégraphique signé Marie Bélin met en lumière l'espace du Parc La Fontaine en intégrant les danseurs dans aux lignes de force du paysage qu'au mouvement des promeneurs. So it's a is that happening just tonight, or is that going on for tomorrow?
It's tomorrow night as well, and I think then it goes on through the weekend as well. In my understanding, I'm a little bit confused about it as well, but I think they're just going to be dancing in situ.
Oh, actually, I was passing through Parc La Fontaine, and I saw it's happening between 6 and 8 before any night they have a show in Théâtre de Verdure.
Okay.
It's going to be happening.
Aha. And it really is dancing in situ and suddenly just...
Yep.
Oh.
And it's kind of integrating passers-by in kind of... Yeah, it looks interesting.
While they're on the subway?
not on the subway while they're in the park. And then the other thing, which Chris is already interviewed somebody from Dance Animal, haven't you?
Yeah,
and that's going to be showed later, is it?
Yeah, we're going to play that probably in about 5 minutes or so. Robin Henderson, who is the originator, director, choreographer, and everything like that. She did Dance Animal, and I will hit the play button eventually soon.
Yeah, so that's also at the Mainline Theater, and that's at 7 o'clock. And you can wait to hear a bit more about that. And then at 11:30 in the loft for the Just for Laughs Museum, there's a silent disco, which is happening. Is that every night until the 26th as well?
Yes, that's every night. And tonight, I think, one of the other contributors to Movement Museum, Finn Upham. Finn, that's an easy way around it. Just call everybody by their first names.
Yeah, okay. Who needs surnames?
And she and her posse are going to Silent Disco, and she has her little digital recorder.
They're going tonight?
Yes, they're going tonight.
Yeah, Silent Disco is a bit of a misnomer because anyone who's ever actually been to one, they're surprisingly loud.
Yes.
As everybody sings out of tune to different songs on their headphones. It's pretty interesting and definitely worth checking out.
We will be getting a report hopefully next week, maybe the week after.
Great. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be moving on to the 25th of July. And there are free ballroom dance lessons available at Parc Jean Drapeau. You can learn the cha-cha, the tango, merengue, and lovers of all levels can gather just outside the Jean Drapeau metro station. That's at 7 o'clock. And that is also running on the Sunday too, is it? The 25th is Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, of course, Tam Tams on Sunday the 26th. And you can reserve a market spot if you want to, if you have something to sell.
If you don't want to dance and you want
to
make some money.
If you don't want to dance and you want to make some money, maybe you could sell dancing shoes or any other dancing accoutrements.
Tchotchkes, dust gathering objects.
Yeah, you could make spoons.
Yes.
Any kind of money-making exercise.
Although they're speaking of money-making exercises, I got one here on the auditions thing, which isn't really an audition, but it is Mary Schuernard's company. She seems to be hiring up like a storm. It's past 2 weeks we've been giving out like sort of auditions for the dancers. If you're a guy and you sort of know how to move, I think she wants you, and she wants you now. However, now it's a sort of thing where she's looking for a directeur or directrice de production, which is sort of like, oh, maybe for those people who can't move but are sort of organized. And so yes, the official line is La Compagnie Marie Chouinard recherche une directeur directrice de production pour assister Marie Chouinard dans sa nouvelle création. Your responsibilities are planifier, superviser et coordonner le travail de l'équipe de production, prévoir, négocier et contrôler le frais du production, planifier et trouver des ressources techniques nécessaires à la realization de la production, and assister la direction artistique. What you need as your minimum qualifications are 3 ans d'expérience en direction de production pour les arts de la scène. You also need experience dans le milieu de la danse, une atu, which is a bonus, and then bonne connaissance des nouvelles technologies, and you need to be bilingual, which is why I am flipping between two languages here.
Good thinking.
And yeah, it's a full-time regular job, but it is temporary. It goes only until the 12th of March 2010. Si vous désirez faire une application, faire parvenir votre curriculum vitae ainsi qu'une lettre de motivation d'ici avant le 14 août. Oh, hold on a second. I think we got our date screwed up here because they're hiring. The job is until the 12th of March 2010. However, the deadline for applications is the 14th of August 2010. I think somebody might have done a typo there.
Well.
And yeah, you got to send it to Direction des Ressources Humaines, Compagnie Marie Schuernard, 4499 Avenue de l'Esplanade, Montréal, Québec, HDW1T2, ou par courriel à tgoulet@mariechouinard.com, and then only the candidates that they want to talk to are going to be called back. So don't get depressed if you don't hear from them.
And don't phone them, because then they'll hate you.
Yes. However, I think we now barely have enough time. No, oh, geez, man, Robin's going to be annoyed as all get go on me. I've sort of delayed her interview all the time. And because, yeah, we're... running out of tracks, out of stage space. Hold on a second. Let me just get rid of this last ad that we got to play so that we can make everybody happy here and make sure that our bills are paid. Hold on one second.
The Jamaica Association of Montreal proudly presents Jamaica Day 2009, Saturday, July 25th at Île Sainte-Hélène, from 12 p.m. to 11 p.m. A Parc Jean Trapeau Le Week-end de Monde event. Free admission for all. Live entertainment, food, and arts and crafts for the whole family. Metro Jean Drapeau. Free shuttle buses available courtesy of the STM leaving from Plamondon and Linogru metro stations from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Jamaica Day 2009. Saturday, July 25th, 2009 at Île Sainte-Hélène. Sponsored by Ville de Montréal, Western Union, and Jamaica Money Transfer. For more information, dial 514-737-8229. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
And yes, we're back. It's 2:49. It's Movement Museum. And I think we have about 20 seconds of this music as introduction to my interview with Robin Henderson, who is the director, artistic director, choreographer, and main head honcho person behind Dance Animal, which played at the Fringe Festival back in June and at the Zoo Fest tonight and then in future, I don't know where. This is part one of a 5-part interview, and I wish
I'm new on the whole interview scene. And it can be very challenging to answer extremely vague questions. For example, what would be, tell us about Dance Animal. Well, where do I even start? I have so much to say, and I'm so excited that I want to share every detail. And well, we've been talking for an hour and a half now. I'm not 2 hours. I'm not a concise person. I like to talk. That's the other thing I'm noticing with interviews. Sometimes I'll start out by answering the question and it goes right off on a different tangent. But again, I think as an artist, it's a skill I'm going to have to get better at, because if I want people paying attention to Dance Animal, then I need to get better at interviews. Because if we're interesting in an interview, then maybe that'll encourage people to come out and see our show. It's been a really fantastic learning curve, and very much a learning curve. It's been great. It's been terrible. It's been a lot of problem solving, a lot of negotiating personalities, negotiating people's schedules, and being patient and being firm. And making decisions sometimes, the more I'm placed in a leadership position, I understand that sometimes as the director, choreographer, you have to make choices for the group that the group isn't going to necessarily like. And that's okay. And once they've gotten over their initial reaction, they generally understand that you've had to make that choice. It's been a great journey. And I'm very excited to see what happens after this. And I also understand that it's up to me to make it happen in the future. And that's the other thing that's great about living in Montreal, is there's a lot of independent artists making their own work happen here, because there's not a lot of paid opportunities. So we're forced into creativity, and there's great stuff happening in Montreal that gets me really excited. What I hope to do is to develop a catalog of routines, so that whenever we're asked to perform at cabarets or at different events, corporate events, private events, whatever, we can just say, okay, how many people do we have available for that night? All right, let's do this routine. This is popular, let's do this routine. And then, of course, I want to tour us. That is high priority on my list of things to do post-Fringe. Because we've done so well here, I'd like to tour us on the Fringe circuit. And the idea there is to establish a reputation in different cities when there's already an audience waiting to buy tickets, instead of just showing up cold in a city where nobody knows us and then trying to mount our show. So the idea is to tour the fringe circuit, let people get to know us, and then in the future, we can just, instead of having to do the fringe circuit, we can just go back, put on our show. I'm absolutely approaching this project as though we are a rock and roll band, and I also am very aware that I've cast a group of people who are extremely talented and busy, and so I'm already losing one dancer next year to NTS. He's entering the acting program, which is fantastic. We're really thrilled for him and support that. But what that means is that now I'm going to be holding auditions and bringing in new... And that, I know that's going to happen a lot. You can't hold on to a group of really talented young people for very long. But that's why my motivation is very high to keep the momentum going for this project. Because if I can get them work, then I'm going to become the... My dance animal will become their priority. And they can still do their projects on the side, but that they know that they can be making... They can be paying their rent through Dance Animal. That would be fantastic for me. I would love that. Because that's something, I've got over 20 people involved in this project and no one's been paid a cent. And we have been working hard for a really long time. So I can't say enough about my dancers and my design team. Our dancers are Dan Janot, Anders Yates, Mark Rowland, Joseph Bembridge, Nico Rassico, Steph McKenna, Steph Breton, also known as Stéphanie Breton, Sarah Hansen, Vanessa Neal, myself, Robin Henderson. Those are the dancers. Our design team, I've got a costume designer named Phil Katawaki. I've got a phenomenal lighting and sound designer named Pierre-Luc Brunet, a recent graduate from NTS. My stage manager is Bonnie Moore. I've got three videographers led by Laura Neal, who's Vanessa's sister. I've got a publicist named Emma Lanza. She's done a great job. And I think that's it at the moment. I really want to go viral with this project. At the moment, again, because I can't pay people, we can only do what we can with our limited resources. And the idea when bringing in the videographers is to start putting together a reel so that I can go to producers and go, look at us, look at what we did, look at the audience response. And in that, we'll be doing individual interviews with the animals. There'll be shots of us in rehearsal. The idea is selling us as a whole group, not just what we do on stage, because I think one of our greatest strengths is all the beautiful personalities in this group. They really, out of all the people that auditioned, these were the 10 people who sparkled the most. They weren't necessarily the best dancers. That wasn't what I was looking for. I was just looking to see who caught my eye, who do I want to look at on stage, and I wanted these people definitely fit the bill on that. Well, I just put out a Facebook invite, the wonder of Facebook, and somehow that got picked up by The Hour, and the announcement got published by them in their page 2 or whatever. And it just got circulated amongst the theater community. Again, I wasn't looking for dancers, so I didn't even go into the dance community. I only wanted actors because of the comedy that I knew I was going to be bringing into the project. And then we held auditions at Mainline. Like I said, I had over 70 people come out. It was a very standard dance audition. I would bring in about 10, 12 people at a time. I taught them the routine. That's not true. Everybody learned the routine all at once, so they were all packed into the rehearsal room. They learned the routines, then I sent them out. They had about 15 minutes to prepare, then I brought them in 10 at a time, and it was that, those horrible auditions you see on TV where they would do it, and I would say, you, next round, everybody else, thank you very much. Which is... as a director, I hate doing that, but it's what you got to get the job done. By the end of the day, I had to whittle down 70 people down. Well, originally I only wanted to cast 8, but then there were so many good people, I changed my number to 10. There is food in Dance Animal, but it's mimed. There's a whole scene that goes down. This is one of our schmances between 3 chefs and rats. And I've said it to Carmina Burana, And it's a face-off. The rats come in to try to steal the chef's foods, and there's the head chef who is dominant over their sous chefs. Obviously, I'm borrowing all this from when I've worked in restaurant kitchens, and chefs are the biggest divas on the planet. Like, way worse than actors. You think, who could be worse than actors? Chefs. Yeah, they're really, they're passionate people, and they take great liberties to dominate. It's also a hierarchy, you know, there's a male hierarchy in a kitchen, and that men respond to very well. Women don't work in the same way, but so I tried to incorporate that experience into Carmina. I went to Queens. I started in the business program, quickly realized that I was not a fan of university level calculus. And also that business program was really funneling people into becoming accountants and financial advisors and working on Bay Street. And that program did not recognize that there was a lot of creative people in my class. There were a lot of artists, and just because you're an artist doesn't mean you can't be business-minded. In fact, where a lot of artists fall down is that they aren't business-minded. This is show business. And so there wasn't room for someone like me in that program, so I left. I studied English literature while all my friends went into professional jobs in the summer. I wanted to be outside, so I went tree planting. I planted trees for 3 years to pay for university, and then after university, I wanted to travel. Everybody was going into med school and law school and master's degrees, and I was like, get me out of here. I've been in a classroom since I was four. I couldn't bear the thought of being trapped anymore. So I went backpacking for 2 years through Central and South America. It was great. It was great. And that's how I got into cooking, because I needed to finance my travels. So instead of planting trees, 3 years is enough, I started cooking for the tree planters. And I did that for 5 seasons. So I was in the tree planting business for 8 seasons, which is a lot longer than most people, but I loved it. I love working up north. I loved being outdoors. I loved the planters. I loved the work ethic that I learned there, that I have applied in Dance Animal, absolutely. And then after traveling, I decided I wanted to continue travel, but to stay in one place. So I moved to the UK, I moved to London, where I started out working in my local arts festival, and from there it just started branching out. I ended up working at the BBC in the arts department as a researcher, which was a fantastic job. I just loved it, learned a lot there. And then I also balanced the television work with music industry work, where I worked at really large festivals, Glastonbury, London Jazz Festival, Big Chill, amongst others. And there I really learned how to produce a show. So I was always backstage with the artists, in between the production team and the artists.
Thank you.